From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some topics to talk over, Zorba, tell us.
Yes, we're going to talk about tips for grilling. I know that's on everyone's mind right now, thinking about when you're going to turn on that grill, put in the charcoal, and have something delicious to eat. How do you stay safe? Isn't that what you think about all the time, Tom?
I don't grill, but people who do.
People who do will like
what else?
Naps may help a baby learn, and what does that mean for adults?
Okay, and our recipe?
Pat's Summer Rolls.
Huh?
Pat's Summer Rolls.
That's from Pat, a listener.
That's right, it's from Pat.
Okay.
This is a listener-sponsored recipe. It's a really good recipe. I think even you'll like it.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. To the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Z. My question is about low T. About 3 years ago, I had a doctor who was appalled at my low T, and so he put me on a gel, and he said use it every day on my chest, and I did, and I was running around here like a 15-year-old. I had the best trim lawn on the street. I had the best painted house. I had... But I would love some of that energy back. I quit after about 3 months just because I kind of sublimated everything I could, you know. Just about rebuilt my house. But I would, my present doctor and I have been talking about it. I'm a little concerned with, you know, there's all these lawyers, ambulance chasers on the television saying it can cause heart attack and all the stroke. And I was wondering if I could use it once or twice a week without worrying about it.
Yeah. Why were you worrying about it?
Well, mostly because, again, I think I was using too much. I mean, I was running around here bouncing off of walls. I love the energy. I loved it. But, you know, the side effects just weren't that fun for a 65-year-old.
Uh-huh. Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, let's look at this energy that you may have had. You know, studies have shown, if you look at it, men's testosterone peaks, you know, somewhere around 18, 19, 20, and then over time tends to reduce. And we've known this for a long time, but there is no male menopause like there is female menopause, which actually has to do with ovarian failure and has to do with the lack of production of a number of hormones, pituitary hormones, and ovarian hormones. But once there was money in making something other than an injection, injections of testosterone were the only treatment for many, many years. Once there was money, then there was advertising, and then popped up, of course, a $3 to $4 billion a year industry. And if you look at testosterone and what it actually does, it doesn't do what the advertisements show. Now, one of the advertisements that I always look at is that I don't watch a lot of television, but if this is on, it's on all the time. They say low T, and then they show construction going up on a wall, and they show the fact that the T gets higher and higher, the low testosterone, when the fact is Viagra, Levitra, Cialis are much better for erectile function than testosterone ever was and ever will be. It has nothing to do with it. In other words, it is not a treatment for erectile dysfunction because it doesn't work as well. Very interesting, you know, aspect of that.
Well, here's the thing. I don't care about that part of it. You know, you think 65 maybe is a little early to not give a damn, but I just don't. And my wife and I are comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love that energy.
Yeah, well, if you had energy from it, the side effect of that energy is heart attack and stroke. And that's pretty well established. In other words, I would say that is pretty well established. So yes, you may get the energy, but you run the risk of a heart attack and stroke. And that's kind of one of the reasons that that's one of the reasons I, for one, as a family doc, shy away from giving testosterone. And just because you measure it doesn't mean it actually has to be treated. And a lot of doctors pretty much do a lot to pharmaceutical advertising, are treating it because they measure it. And I don't measure it unless there is some reason to actually do it. So my suggestion is far better to get a good night's sleep and do other things and not to take it. And if you're going to take it twice a week, I still don't think it's a good idea because of the heart attack and stroke risk.
Good. All right. That's exactly what I wanted to know. Thank you so much.
I do have another suggestion. If you want to get work done, you're 65-year-old, you know, I assume you've saved some money. You hire a 20-year-old to do the work around the house, and you sit back and watch them do it. Far more relaxing, very, very, you know, especially if they do a good job, then you have plenty of energy to do other things.
Yeah, just call me Spud, right? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate the call.
Spud versus Stud.
But, you know, a lot of guys think, I'm no longer a real man if I have to hire somebody to do this.
No, I understand that. Yeah. I mean, they go, well, yeah, I should be able to do it. There's the guilt factor because I should be able to do it. I should do it forever and no longer. So do you hire anyone to do your lawn or stuff around the house? You do?
Well, not the lawn anymore. We had a lot of other work done, bark put on there cobblestones. Mm-hmm. I have a yard that's about as big as this room, I can mow that.
Yeah. So you hired people to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, I understand that. Yeah. You know, real men do work around the house, bring in concrete, put on the concrete, do that with the lawn.
But I think
you're right.
I think when I hit 60 years old, I think I'll start hiring more.
When you hit 60 years old.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba in Wanakee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. First of all, thank Public Radio and Dr. Zorba for this excellent public service.
Well, thank you.
My question is, have you ever had a patient, a doctor, that has had problems where they ended up in the hospital because they consumed too much black licorice?
Uh-huh. Have you ended up in the hospital because you consumed too much black licorice?
Yes. Last summer, I have a long-standing problem with GERD and acid reflux and Barrett's esophagus. I, a lot of the acid reducers, including the proton pump inhibitor and the Zantac and so forth, they were helping, but, you know, not really that much. I was just really looking for some relief. I was talking to a lady in Madison who said, her husband had tried black licorice, and it solved his problem.
Oh, okay.
Well, I ended up getting some real good black licorice from the licorice root plant
Where'd you get it? You mean black licorice candy or the plant?
Oh, the real stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, the stuff that has a chemical in it that depletes potassium from your bloodstream and causes a number of different. I did some research on it later, but anyway, I ended up in the hospital.
I want to go back a second. Where did you get this black licorice plant? I mean, how'd you get that?
It's a candy. It was sold in a Madison store, and it is excellent. It's just very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out that it has this chemical in it. And I read some stuff on the WebMD called licorice side effects and safety, and learned a lot. In terms of when I was in the hospital, I ended up. I have no memory of about 12 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much did you eat?
I was eating. I mean, I just thought it's candy.
Yeah.
You know, and. So I was eating about anywhere from 4 to 8 pieces a day.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's not. I don't think that's even a lot of pieces, 4 to 8 pieces of black licorice. You know, the world is divided up into people who like black licorice and people who don't like black licorice. So you're eating 4 to 8 pieces, little pieces, big pieces, that was all? How long were you doing that for?
About, maybe an inch and a half long and about, 3/4 of an inch wide.
Oh, okay. Not a lot. And you were doing that for how many days?
Oh, I've been doing that for months.
Oh, you were doing that for months, every single day. And you were doing it to what? Why were you having so much licorice?
Oh, well, I was seeing if it would help. It was a nice dessert, for one thing.
I'm not a licorice lover, so
yeah,
it's hard for me to relate.
And I love licorice. It's just the most wonderful in the world. But the other thing was that, well, maybe this will help my GERD. And it cured
my acid reflux. That's right.
No question about it.
Uh-huh. But it put you in the hospital, which was definitely
hospital,
a downside.
You know, with electrolytes.
So your potassium, so you had a hypokalemia, low potassium from that. Were you on a diuretic? At the same time? So nothing. Any other meds you were on other than the GERD meds like omeprazole, Prilosec, or Zantac? Were you on any other medications at all?
Oh, yeah. Well, I take Diltiazem and lots of other. It's almost too many.
Lots of other meds. So, you know, you bring up a good point. So for those people who have black licorice mania, they may have to get their potassium checked. I did an article once a couple of years ago on licorice, and I'll have to look back in that and see what I said. I don't necessarily remember what I say all the time either. Tom is laughing to see what I said. So, well, thanks for filling us in with that. Now, I've got a question for you. You love black licorice. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm not. Well, the doctors told me is if you want to live, you better stop black licorice permanently.
Yeah. So, are you able to do that?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
I was addicted, but it's like hand abuse for the alcohol.
It's hand abuse for the alcohol.
You can die from this.
That's exactly what it is. Well, you know, I think you bring up a very important point. For those people who have a mania for black licorice, get your potassium checked to make sure your potassium isn't down. Thanks. I have a question for you. Are you going to start having red licorice, which has no licorice in it?
I think I'm going to swear off on all of it.
I wonder if there's something like an AA for licorice eaters. I wonder if I can find
I've been
some.
Looking.
Thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you.
800-462-7413.
You know, there's chocoholics, and now we have licorice-aholics, so we have to be careful.
Now, if you really liked black licorice, you would have argued with him a little bit.
Yes, I would have argued with him, yes, but black licorice is not. I'll have a little piece of it. That's about it. That's about it. And then I put it off to the side.
Okay, barbecue tips.
Yes, barbecue tips. It is barbecue time. We don't have any music because there is no music for barbecue time. Okay, gas versus barbecue, is either one healthier? The answer is?
No.
No, that's right. Very good. No. Just make sure you're careful. Now, I'll tell you what happened to me once. I was at a friend's house in Princeton, good friends of ours in Princeton, New Jersey, and they had one of them at $5,000 barbecues that just happened to be at the house. They inherited it with the house, and we're trying to start it, not knowing what they're doing, and all of a sudden it goes whoosh and blows up and singes my mustache and my eyebrows.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it could have been potentially dangerous because we didn't know what we were doing. So if you have a gas barbecue and you don't know what you're doing, read the instructions.
Yeah,
don't
right.
do what I did. Okay, get it hot. Very important. You want to get the barbecue super hot before you put anything on it because that's important for grilling the meat and sealing it in if you're going to put in any meat product. And most, you know, a lot of the times that's what you're putting on a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
That means 15 to 20 minutes to make sure it's hot. If it's a charcoal, same thing. It's 15 to 20 minutes after the charcoal is in there. Next thing, brush it off. What you want to do is get rid of the stuff that's on the barbecue, the old stuff, and then you want to oil
it. On the grill, right? Yeah.
Then you want to oil it up. After you brush it off, especially if you're doing boneless, skinless chicken breasts, they're going to stick to the grill and not come off. So you take either a brush or something else with a little olive oil or any kind of vegetable oil, and after you get rid of the stuff that is from the last grill you had, after you clean that off on the hot grill, you then put some oil on it, and it makes a difference. That's it. The next thing is safety. If you're putting on either any kind of a meat product, such as a chicken product, or we'll say a meat product, you want to make sure that you wash off your utensils after you actually use them, like the cutting board, because if you cut chicken on a cutting board, there may be salmonella on the board. And so you want to wash the board that you actually cut the chicken on or put it on. And the same for meat, because especially ground meat, it contains E. coli. You can't be sure if it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Marinating your meat can make a big difference because it becomes smoother on the inside. A grill basket I highly recommend, because then you can do vegetables on the grill. Mm-hmm. And we always put vegetables on the grill. You don't grill.
I don't grill, no.
You don't grill. But Carl, I wonder if Carl, do you grill vegetables on the grill?
Sure, all the time.
See, all the time. See, yeah. So do you have a grill basket to put it on the grill?
I usually use tinfoil.
Tinfoil. A grill basket is nice.
Now we're
going
to have to pay Carl more, because once he's on the radio,
that's a talent fee
that we didn't used to have to pay him. Geez, don't do that anymore.
Don't do it anymore. And then the two more things. Yeah. If it's tame the flames, always keep a little water on there, so in case the oil causes the grill to flame up. And finally, when you take it off the grill, let it rest. In other words, don't just put it on the plate and eat it right away. Mm-hmm. But especially if it's meat or chicken, let it rest for about 5 minutes, and the juices go back in there. Mm-hmm. And those are my grilling suggestions.
Yeah, getting back to the health thing, there is not a health danger to charcoal when you...
No, and the issue is nitrosamines and nitrosamines that are produced when you actually grill food. And there's a, quote, a possible health risk with cancer. Well, if you look at it, the risk is so absolutely minuscule, the potential risk, that you wonder why anyone thinks about it. And the reason is, of course, we always think about cancer. We always worry about it. I've looked at the data about grilling, and I don't think it's hokum. In other words, I don't think it's totally done. But I think the risk is much greater that you will actually injure yourself like I did by turning on the gas grill incorrectly than getting cancer from the nitrosamines.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And before we take a break, Sorba, let's take a dive into the murky waters of medical quackery in our newest segment we call Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, let's talk about a few nutritionists, Adele Davis and Lelord Cordell.
That's right. Now, Adele Davis was big. She was hot in the 70s. Adele Davis for this, Adele Davis for that. And she and this other guy called Cordell, who was lost to the dustbin of history, had basically a program, Eat for Better Sex. Eat for better sex.
Okay.
Eat for better sex. And they talked about...
You've got our attention.
Yeah, I've got... That's right. I've got the attention of everyone listening to public radio, Eat for Better Sex. And her concept was that there's certain foods that stimulate the sex glands. Okay, the sex glands in the body are stimulated. And they're stimulated by oysters. I mean, you've heard about that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
By eggs, and by red meat. Red meat.
Okay.
Red meat. Oyster, eggs, and red meat. And the protein is very important. By the way, milk is in there also. And the idea is that people who are having sex problems should eat more oysters, eggs, and red meats, because these are basically aphrodisiacs. And they said, they said that sex experts, by the way, where do they get their degree from? I never quite figured that out.
They don't have sex 101
at the university. What makes you a sex expert? Now, keep in mind that Adele Davis wrote this before even Masters and Johnson's. We're going way back to Dr. Peabody, Bullwinkle, Rocky and Bullwinkle time. That's when she wrote. But sex experts basically have studied aphrodisiac foods, I'm quoting from her, and the sexual powers that they actually produce, and that sexual secretions from the sex glands can occur if you eat the right things. And there are other things, such as the men out west eat cattle testicles, Rocky Mountain oysters, for better sex. And this is proven because it has a diuretic effect. And if you have a diuresis from the sex glands, you can have better sex. This is what Adele Davis recommends for
Don't tell me
sex.
That isn't true.
You mean you've been eating Rocky Mountain oysters for years. That's it. Trying to have better sex. And that's our quack section for today.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this new segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet.
We have our recipe that's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, and more of your emails. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, Pat's Summer Rolls, this one from listener Pat C. of Golden Valley, Minnesota.
So a neighbor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Minnesota's a neighbor. Very nice, delicious. I think you'll like something like this. It's something that is tasty for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get on to the recipe. First of all, juice from 1/2 lime.
Juice from 1/2 lime.
That's right. And the other 1/2 lime you put in your Corona.
Absolutely.
You like that.
Absolutely.
See, you like that. You had a smile. I got a smile out of you.
Oh, yeah.
Two tablespoonfuls of canola oil.
Mm-hmm. 2 tablespoons canola oil.
That's right. 1 tablespoonful of rice vinegar.
A tablespoon of rice vinegar.
1/2 teaspoon of Dijon mustard.
Mm-hmm. 1/2 tea Dijon mustard.
1/2 teaspoon of soy sauce.
1/2 tea soy sauce.
1 teaspoon of brown sugar.
1 tea brown sugar.
2 avocados.
2 avocados.
20 rice paper rounds, 6 or 8 inches in diameter.
20 rice paper rounds, 6 or 8 inches in diameter. Can you get those pretty much anywhere?
Yeah. Do you know what they are?
Well, I'm guessing they're not paper.
they're rice paper, and they're round because they're called rice paper.
Yeah.
Have you ever had, like, spring rolls, you know, that you dip in?
Oh, sure.
Those are rice paper rounds.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Those are rice paper rounds. So instead of wonton, you know, or egg rolls, which are crispy that are made of dough, these are made of rice paper, and you'll see how we make them.
Oh, okay.
And, yes, you can buy them at Asian grocery stores and other places.
Okay.
10 green lettuce leaves.
10 green lettuce leaves.
You're going to have leaves, and then you're going to get a bunch of leaves from fresh basil and fresh mint, if you like mint. My wife, Penny, hates mint, so I wouldn't use mint with the recipe.
But you'd use the basil.
I would.
Mm-hmm. I would.
A couple of carrots, shredded carrots. A
couple of shredded carrots.
You can either shred your carrots, or you can be like me probably and buy shredded carrots. Sometimes I'm lazy. Mm-hmm. And a cucumber cut into thin strips.
Mm-hmm. Cucumber cut into thin strips.
Okay, so let's make the recipe. In a small bowl, stir together the lime juice, oil, vinegar, mustard, soy sauce, and brown sugar until it dissolves. Set it aside. Then halve and pit the avocado. Cut them into 1/2-inch diced because you're going to use them. Then place in a wide, shallow bowl. Here, Tom, this is the part you should pay attention to. This is how we make rice paper. So I know you're going to want to do this.
Okay, I'm listening.
You're going to want to do this. So in a wide, shallow bowl, put warm water. Then lay a clean paper towel next to the bowl. Clean towel, a kitchen towel rather, not a paper towel, excuse me, next to the bowl. Dip the rice paper into the water for a few seconds until it softens. Then lay it flat on the towel. Okay, you're going to take this thing and lay it flat on the towel. Dip a second round into the water. Lay it directly on top of the first. And in another towel, you pat the top of the rice paper dry. So in other words, you've moistened it. You put 2 of these rounds together, and then you've dried it up. And then it'll be very pliable. Mm-hmm. So you can do that next time you make this for Monica.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying any attention.
That's it. Okay. Center lettuce leaf on top of the stacked rice paper.
Yeah.
Starting at about 1/3 in from the edge closer to you, arrange a few of the basil leaves, mint leaves, and line across the lettuce leaf. Top with a small roll of carrots, some cucumber, and avocado. Be careful not to overstuff it. Mm-hmm. Then lift the bottom edge and roll it over. Make it into a nice tight cylinder. You've got nice stuffing inside of there until it fills it up nice and tight. Set the seam side down. Repeat with the remaining rice paper ingredients, and you can make 10 rolls. So you can figure kind of putting the stuff in the roll, putting it in, rolling it up.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And you
I'm looking at Pat's recipe, and you said a cucumber. She says 1/2 cucumber. I assume if you really like cucumbers.
I love cucumbers. Yeah. Can you eat just, do you like cucumbers? Oh, obviously that was not much of an advertisement for the Cucumber Association of America. No. I love cucumbers.
You just put as much cucumber in
That's
as you
right.
want.
And, yeah. and basically, you've got now something. You've got a wonderful, wonderful little recipe on here, and you can try it. It's great. And once you get used to the rice paper, once you do it once or twice, the key is not to leave it in the warm water too long, just enough to soften it.
And if I want a copy of this, I can go to Pat.
That's right. You can go to Pat, or if you don't have Pat's address, and we're not going to give it to you, you can go to ZorbaPastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom, pictures of me. You can find this recipe. You can find other recipes. You can find links for a whole bunch of things that you will want to know about. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook. I was trying to put Twitter and Facebook together. It's a Twitter, Facebook combination. You can find us on Facebook, or don't forget, I tweet at Dr. Zorba.
800-462-7413, our number, that's 800-462-7413.
Facebook.
A listener now, Zorba in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I was going to ask the doctor about my vertigo issues. When I was 17, I'm 34 now, so half my life ago, I had a very bad infection that brought with it a high fever that wouldn't break. And my understanding from the ear, nose, and throat specialist at the time is that that high fever created the vertigo that I had subsequently. And that was about 6 months. I battled vertigo for about 6 months, was told during that time that I may never have a fully functioning equilibrium. My equilibrium will probably always be a little bit off. I may have, you know, bouts of vertigo here and there. So when I do, for the last 17 years, when I do have small bouts of it, I don't really think anything of it. I just think that it's, you know, probably related to that. And it's never affected me terribly. It affects me a little bit when I fly, which I don't fly often. It affects me when I'm a passenger in a vehicle, but not when I'm driving. So I just try to always drive and never be a passenger. When it has started affecting me recently, it sounds silly, but I have two children. They are 6 and 7. And since they were born, I've been looking forward to when they were old enough to go on carnival rides and theme park rides and roller coasters. And they're finally at the age where they can go on some of the more fun, more exhilarating rides as long as they have a parent with them. And at a county fair recently on a Ferris wheel, which is not a particularly exciting ride, that ride left me feeling extremely dizzy, nauseous, migraine, headache. It pretty much ruined the rest of the day.
Oh.
Now we're on summer vacation. We have hopes and plans of theme parks and water parks and things like that. And I'm wondering if there's something I can do to help combat those symptoms before they start, so that I don't have to sit on the sidelines while my children do those fun things and I can do them with them.
Yeah, of course. Well, you can't go on those carnival rides where they whirl you around or put you up in the air and twist you back and forth. And
I can't. I could when I was younger, and I loved them. But now that would completely ruin me.
Yeah.
So you love those? Did you like those rides, Tom?
I did when I was
roller
a kid.
Coasters.
Yeah.
I never liked roller coasters because I always vomited. I had the same problem. I had vertigo. Yeah. I'd be on there and it would ruin the whole day. So I mean, in Chicago, we had a place called Riverview, and the Bob's was like the biggest ride, and I could never go on something like that. So when you were a kid, you liked these rides, and they were okay for you,
right?
And then you turned 17, had this episode, and since that time, you've had trouble on and off.
I have trouble with, I mean, really any type of motion other than just general walking, jogging, or driving. Any type of motion.
So you're going with your kids, and then I want to ask a couple of questions. Have you ever, do you take Dramamine or an antihistamine? Have you done that before you go into carnivals?
I have taken Dramamine when I fly, which isn't often, and it definitely helps with the flying.
Okay.
But I have not tried that with a carnivore.
And how about a scopolamine patch, a scope patch? I bet you haven't tried that either.
No, sir.
Okay. I have a couple of suggestions. First of all, you know, you want to be able to go on some of these rides. Now, the Ferris wheel, the Ferris wheel is a gentle ride compared to a roller coaster. It may not work in a roller coaster, but the the first thing I would try, the easiest thing, is I would try over-the-counter Dramamine, one tablet, and if that doesn't work, I'd try two tablets. It's got to be in your system for an hour or two before, at least. It can be there three or four hours. It lasts for about 6 to 8 hours. The side effect of it is sleepiness. So that's the side effect. So you have to get through that side effect because it crosses the brain-blood barrier, and the non-sedating antihistamines do not work as well as the sedating antihistamines. Benadryl works the best, but that's used in Tylenol PM, and it might put you to sleep. I would go for Dramamine, one tablet or two. And what I would do before I went is I'd get a good night's sleep, and if it was me, I would drink a lot of coffee. Do you like coffee?
I do, yes, sir.
So drink some coffee, double shot espresso, because you know you're going to be sleepy. And besides, you're with your kids. You're not going to fall asleep, you know, with your kids. You may just notice that. That's what I would try. I mean, it's not going to – I would try that first. And if that fails, I would also call your doctor. There's a patch called the scopolamine patch, and you put it behind your ear. It actually can go anywhere on your body, but it's tiny, and you'll know if it's there. It's got to go on thin skin. And it releases something called scopolamine in very, very small amounts in your bloodstream. And that also is very effective for motion sickness. When people go on cruises or on boats, they often use it. Side effect from that, by the way, can be sleepiness too, but and a dry mouth. But that is the other thing I would try. That's by prescription. And if that fails, I would try them both together. And the chances are this is really going to make it so you can tolerate it enough to go on some dinky little wussy rides with your kids, on there, or the water rides, which are lots of fun. So
that's great. I appreciate the advice. I will try both of those.
So are you on the road right now, going with your kids to various places?
Not today, but in the very near future, we are. We're taking a road trip, and there will be several stops of that nature.
Enjoy the road trips. Those are some of the fondest memories that I have, is going on road trips with my kids, eating too much, getting dirty on road trips, having ice cream spill on you, and having a grand time. Enjoy them. Enjoy them.
Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
Thank you so much for the call. And before the break, Zorba, it's time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's disagreement comes to us via Facebook from a listener named Deborah. She writes, "Dear Doctor, I have just listened to you on public radio for the last time. Your comment that naturopaths are quacks is ludicrous. They have a legitimate place in our healing lives. They are trained to help find the root cause of the ailment versus traditional medicine's role in masking or managing the symptoms. Unfortunately, until our healthcare system recognizes the importance of functional medicine, we will continue to be sick. Your opinion is very small-minded."
Well, first of all, thanks for that email. I actually never called naturopaths quacks. That was not the case. I may have said that a naturopath on a specific issue was engaged in quackery. That becomes a different issue. Mm-hmm. Allopathic medicine does not just treat the symptoms and mask the disease. That is completely wrong. When you look at the importance, we just talked about vitamins, for instance, of discovering that folic acid was important to prevent spina bifida in babies, and then we put folic acid and flour. That's allopathic medicine that actually came up with that. That was not the case. The issue with naturopathic medicine is that quite often naturopaths make their money on selling supplements. Mm-hmm. And that becomes then an issue of how much do you want to spend, and that's the case. I think they have a place. I think they especially have a place in chronic pain, in depression, in things that I think that can be very important to people. And I think they have a place also in chronic diseases. But I would never call them quacks. I think you need to have a balance between Eastern and Western medicine. So I take issue. I think that was a misinterpretation of what I said on one of my shows.
Yeah, too bad Deborah isn't listening, though.
Yes, she isn't. But for any of you who go to naturopaths, I'm not engaged against naturopaths at all. I think just like with allopathic medicine, just like with doctors, we all have to know our place in patient care.
If you disagree with something Zorba said, just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research coming up. That's next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, we talk about naps, babies' naps, and research...
On learning. Yeah, and we'll talk about that and what I think has implications for adults. So let me explain what it is. These were 6 to 12-month-old babies. And you know how with a baby you can play peekaboo?
Sure.
You know, you do it a few times, and then they get into the habit, and they smile. So they used something like this. Basically, they had a puppet, and they had a puppet with a bell, and they showed that when they removed the puppet's mitten, the bell rang. Okay, and it made a sound. And what they did is they showed it a few times, so the baby would know. Hey, you move the bell, you move the mitten rather, and the bell rings.
Got it.
And the child laughed and smiled and laughed and smiled and so on. And they did this for a number of times, so that the child learned this. Okay, then they looked at kids, and some kids napped and some kids did not nap. Okay, so they took the kids who napped for roughly an hour and a half. Over the next period of time. And then the kids who did nap, they slept for 30 minutes or less. So you've got the long napping kids and the short napping kids.
They're babies, right?
They're babies, 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
And then what they did is they looked afterwards the next day. Okay, all the kids slept soundly for the night. The next day they took out the puppet to see whether or not the kids had that same expectation based on their smiles of whether or not when it removed the mitt of the button, the bell would ring. Okay, so they're now testing the kids the next day. Do you remember what this puppet did?
Yeah.
The kids who napped were more likely to remember the fact that the puppet had a little bell than the kids who did not nap. So in other words, napping seemed, if you will, to help the memory of the child with the bell. And so what comes up is that it may be that napping is important for learning in infants.
Interesting.
And if you expand, it may be important for learning in adults.
Well, you've talked about napping before on the program.
Absolutely.
How important a nap can be.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we talk about exercise. We go to the gym. We put in 30 minutes here and 15 minutes there. I've got a jawbone, which is like a Fitbit, and I exercise. But we don't talk about napping and the importance of napping and sleep and memory. And I think this is important not only for children to make sure especially infants nap, but it may be important for us as adults. Now, do you ever nap at all, Tom?
Not anymore, no.
Do you used to nap years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think after you're done with a nap, you may remember things, you may be more bright?
I don't think.
No, I think it makes a big difference. And I think this study really shows that actually napping may be an important part of, if you will, your health. And so when you're looking at vitality and energy, when you're looking at eating right and exercising right, make sure you get enough sleep, and a nap may be your best prescription.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Bozeman, Montana. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I've got a 17-year-old who broke his fibula and tibia, and he developed an embolism within 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
And he was in ICU for 5 days.
Uh-huh.
And it's not healing correctly. And I'm wondering if we had to go back in for surgery, would there be a chance for a further embolism to reoccur?
Oh, of course. Now, did he have a fat embolism, or did he have, was it a vascular embolism? Do you know?
It went through his lungs.
So once you have it, I believe you're definitely at risk for having that again. But there are ways that that you can reduce that risk, because after you have, for instance, hip surgery as an adult, often knee surgery as an adult, we put people on anticoagulants so we reduce the risk of embolism. You know, so it doesn't reduce it to zero, but it reduces it a lot. Tell me a little bit more about it. How did he break it initially? What was going on?
He got bucked off his horse. And we had a choice of either doing surgery or just setting the leg, mm-hmm. and we set the leg because mm-hmm. okay. it was a pretty clean break, mm-hmm. but it's just not healing correctly.
Okay, so when did he get the embolism? Right afterwards? Was it?
Actually, it was Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th.
And it was 24 hours after the embolism.
Okay, and his leg.
Excuse me, 24 hours after he got the embolism.
After the injury. So, and his leg was immobilized, of course, during that time.
You know, yes, sir.
Yeah, that's it. So because it's immobilization that actually is the thing that makes it likely for embolism, and so he was having a side effect for that. So you put him in a cast, and you don't like the way it's healing. What's going on? What's wrong with
the smaller bone is just not going in correctly.
So the fibula is not going in. Is he having trouble walking? How long has it been since the injury?
He's actually still in a cast.
Still in a cast. So the X-ray shows it's not healing properly? Okay, so they recommended they have surgery and they put a rod in the bone. Is that what they're looking
they
at?
They recommended if it does not heal this next X-ray that they put a rod in.
Uh-huh.
And,
okay,
and I'm worried about the embolism.
Uh-huh. Well, you have good reason. What is he on anything for the embolism right now?
No, he's not.
Okay, how long was he on something for the embolism?
They actually didn't give him anything for that, and I thought it should have been like aspirin or heparin, and I actually gave him aspirin. Mm-hmm. In the meantime.
So was he short of breath? What kind of symptoms did he have? He must have had shortness of breath.
He was short of breath. His lips turned blue, mm-hmm. and we called 911 once again and got him into the hospital.
Sure, and they put it, and he was, they did a CT scan, is that a chest CT, is that how they discovered the embolism?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Well, I've got a couple of suggestions. I have some suggestions here. First of all, who was the one who managed his care, your son's care? The orthopedic surgeon?
It was an orthopedic surgeon.
Anybody else besides the orthopedic surgeon?
No.
Okay. You need to get, I think you need a second opinion. And I would recommend, especially since it happened to him as a young guy, that you get a second opinion from a hematologist. He's how far out now from his embolism? How many weeks?
It's 10 weeks.
So usually at about 3 months, between 3 to 6 months, we stop anticoagulation. But you need a second opinion before he has surgery. And then you need to find out whether or not your son is at risk for other emboli. That's the real question. And I don't have an answer as to why the orthopedic surgeon did not anticoagulate him at that point. And I think you need another doctor to look at the record and see, because usually the standard of care is to anticoagulate after you have that. I don't know why they didn't do that. Does that make some sense?
That makes total sense.
Yeah, you've got to get a second opinion. You need it before the surgery. You don't want this to happen again, because that's, you know, can be devastating.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your call, and I really appreciate your show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. We appreciate the comment. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. Today's curious question comes from a listener, Madasia of Chenault, Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you were talking about olive oil being the king of oils and that coconut oil was a trans fat oil. In my reading over the last several years, I've gleaned that saturated fat is fat that is solid at room temperature, such as palm oil, coconut oil, and butter, and occurs naturally in plants or dairy milk. I supposed by your comment that you consider trans fat oils to be the same as saturated fats. Is this true or just a myth? Thank you from a housewife who holds you in high regard and learns from what she hears."
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, first of all, trans fats and saturated fats are not the same. And mm-hmm. I apologize for any misrepresentation and didn't explain that in the past. Trans fats are put into oils to make them solid, Crisco. And they have been, they were huge in the industry for up to 100 years, for a long, long time. It took years before we discovered that trans fats were bad and that's, you know, that they were actually in many ways worse than saturated fats. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, unsaturated fats tend to be the best. Vegetable oils tend to be the fats. Saturated fats are not as good as unsaturated fats. But if we look on the fat scale, it's the trans fats we want to get rid of. And there has been a tremendous move because of consumers to get them out of baked goods. That's where they tend to be. And the feds have started to even make their own move. The FDA has started to make its own move on trans fats. So coconut oil is still not my favorite oil. Olive oil is still the king. It is a monounsaturated fat that we know gives longevity.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
800-462-7413, our number. Now Zorba, an Eau Claire, Wisconsin listener is with us. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of weeks ago, I happened to be a listener at a listener dinner and got to hear Dr. Zorba speak, and he spoke about many things, but one of the things that has sort of stuck with me was that vitamins and supplements are basically worthless and that we shouldn't bother taking them. And so my question is, I'm wondering about Dr. Zorba's thoughts on using more natural supplements such as chia or flaxseed or hemp.
Well, first of all, I want to put it into context. When I think of supplements, and the more I look at this, the more I see, and this is a general rule, it's not specific. We have to look at it in a global way. Vitamins, the reason that we even learned about vitamins is we started industrializing food. And as a result of that industrialization, we found that there were diseases such as pellagra because people were eating too much corn and they weren't eating a variety of foods, as well as other foods that contain folic acid, the other B vitamins, and so on. So we came in with vitamins, which are essential, and we've gotten rid of vitamins in this country because we've added very natural vitamins to wheat flour in bread. And so that's a way that we deliver vitamins. That's how we deliver folic acid, which is very important for women, really at the very beginning of their pregnancy or before they get pregnant and so on. So I'm not really talking about those, which I think are essential. But when we look at the 40, I think it's either between $20 and $40 billion a year vitamin industry, I think it's selling us, for most part, a house of cards. And the reason is Mother Nature puts other things in food that vitamins do not. And so the data on a multivitamin in people who are 50 years and older shows it doesn't work. The data on fish oil shows, yes, it reduces HDL, the bad cholesterol, LDL, and increases the good cholesterol, but it doesn't reduce heart attacks and strokes. And every time we try a vitamin, we find out it doesn't do much at all. Now, when you talk about natural things such as flaxseed, I think that's good because it's Mother Nature. So it's not really a supplement if you're getting flaxseed. And if you're getting things that are Mother Nature, I think that's good, that are loaded with that. But I'm on this more anti-vitamin kick because the more, and I wasn't always on this, the more I look at it, the more I see it hasn't resulted in anything that's good. And of course, I'm fighting against a major industry. You've got the pharmaceutical industry on one side that says, wait a minute, vitamins are good and we make a ton of money on it, we're selling it. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the natural foods industry that are like in Whole Foods, where they say, wait a minute, we've got natural vitamins, we're making a lot of money. And frankly, it's duck and cover for me because I get lots of angry emails when I come out against vitamins and supplements because, frankly, look at the data, folks. It hasn't shown it does anything. However, the Mediterranean diet works. Those are plentiful fruits and vegetables. The more colorful they are, the more that's in them. Lots of color, lots of variety, and you're home.
Wonderful. Can you tell me reliable sources of good information for finding superfoods and more natural ingredients?
Well, I don't think there's any one Bible that comes to things of this nature. I think there are lots of good things out there. On the whole, for the most part, if you look at food, the more color that's in the food, the more vitamins and minerals that are in the food. Very simple. There's nothing complex. So we know that kale, spinach, for instance, has more vitamins than celery and iceberg lettuce. That's what we know. We may like those, but that. And so that's kind of a general rule to use. And then just a variety. But there's no absolute number here. It's just that we've discovered that people eat an enriched Mediterranean diet with nuts and olive oil, live longer, have fewer heart attacks and fewer strokes.
Lots of listening to public radio works.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the other thing. And going to public radio dinners also will improve your longevity.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. And before we punch out today, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post us on our Facebook page. So we scooped up a few of these questions and comments and would like to share them with you today. First, Carrie in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin asks, "Dear Zorba, what is your feeling on stevia?"
I think it's great. I think it's natural. I think it should be used more and more. And if you like it, keep on using it.
Next, Deborah in Green Cove Springs, Florida writes, "My youngest son has an allergy to onions. However, he can tolerate onion powder. I was just wondering how common it is for a person to have an onion allergy."
I don't really know, but Julia Child would have a fit for anyone who has an onion allergy. It would be very difficult for her to be able to go her and do her PBS show. So the answer is, I don't know.
That's pretty nice, Julia Child, you just
thank
did.
You. I just need the rubber chicken to smash against the board or something like
Moving
that.
Moving right along, here's a potential complicated question from a listener named Ron Zorba. "Why is it so hard for doctors to say, 'I don't know'?"
Oh, gosh, that is a complicated question. You know, I don't know.
And finally, Zorba, let's end on a high note. This Facebook message comes from Steve in Evansville, Wisconsin. "Dear Zorba, I wanted to let you know that your article on the effect of soda on the brain was the incentive for me to stop drinking soda. I drank a can of Mountain Dew every day. The morning I read that article was the first day I didn't have one, and I haven't had one since. Thank you."
Oh, I'm so glad I finally helped a Mountain Dew addict cure his problem without having to go to Mountain Dew Anonymous.
Keep the flood of Facebook comments coming, or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0606Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.